Now it's time for our presentation. Today we have Helen Christensen, one of our members. And Helen is a retired teacher educator. She's been a member of the fellowship for a little over a year. And during that time, she's made a few presentations based on readings in our hymnal. Helen is married to Bruno Sahu, our lay chaplain, and she is also the chair of our Sunday service committee. Helen?
I'm trying it there. Now it's on. Okay. By the way, this is not the entire presentation, okay? So, but you know, first of all, when Carol Porter and Pam Bocking and I decided to form a subcommittee to look at some of the readings and so forth, we identified Sophia Lyon-Fawes as a person of interest. And I had looked for somebody to do it, but people are very busy, and I thought, we should do this one. Little did I realize, and listen, hang on, everybody. I'll try to do as good a presentation as I can, but my goodness, that woman was a giant. And I have to say, that person was a giant, and you'll understand why. So I also want to say thank you, and I see some people who have made some presentations in this series. Thank you very much. And this will be the final one for now. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to do two things. First of all, I'm going to go through her life, and I've shortened it, okay? And then I'm going to share some quotations. You have already done one of the readings. I thought we only had one reading. There are three readings in the hymnal by Sophia Lyon-Fawes. Okay, here we go. There was one more thing. Sophia Lyon-Fawes never knew how old she was, okay? She was born in 1876, and she died in 1978, okay? She was still very active at age 90. So you see, you know, thinking, we're not old. We're not even beginning here. Okay, here we go. Now, I'm taking this from many, many sources, okay? So Sophia Lyon-Fawes, first of all, a summary, was a pioneer in the development and of theory and practice in religious education. Her long and distinguished career led to international recognition as an innovator in the religious education of children. Fawes' life spanned several periods of theological development in the United States, over the course of which her own theology underwent radical revision from evangelical orthodoxy to religious liberalism. The New Beacon series in religious education curriculum was a culmination of her life's work, and most of this is out of print now, but has been reprinted and reissued and so forth. Okay, now, that's the summary. Sophia Lyon was born to Presbyterian missionaries in China on August 2nd, 1876. She died in Hamilton, Ohio on April 14th, 1978. The Lyon family returned from China when Sophia was 3 years old, and they raised their family of seven children in the United States. In 1897, oh, by the way, I put the ages here, and I'm going to her age. Sophia Lyon-Fawes didn't know one thing, and she never realized she was a woman. She wasn't supposed to do all the things that she was doing in that time. So, you know. So, 1897, Sophia received her Bachelor of Arts degree, and 2 years later, She met Charles Harvey Foss at a Christian mission conference, and they married in 1902. Because of his health problems, they moved to New York City, where he accepted a position with the National Board of Missions of the Methodist Church. So she started as a Presbyterian. Sophia became a Methodist because she wanted to be of the same denomination as her husband. And by the way, I looked everywhere on the net. That's it, as far as her husband was concerned. We never heard anything. There was nothing more about him in information. The only thing said that they lived in New York City for all of their married life. But he had health problems, so I wonder, you know. Anyway, okay. In New York, Sophia was offered a scholarship to do her master's work at Teachers College, Columbia University. It has been suggested that this marked, that her thesis marked her first step away from a Bible-centered religious education. And by the way, somebody else who was at Columbia was John Dewey. So kind of an interesting coincidence. Sophia Lyon Foss said that it was at Teachers College that she found out what she wanted to do in life beyond being a wife and a mother. And that was to help in reconstructing the processes and contents of the religious education of children in the light of mankind's growing understanding. And I have to say, this was part of a speech which she made when she was 90. She was the keynote speaker. Sophia Lyon Foss finished her MA in 1904, and a year later, she and Harvey Foss had their first of five children, and it says that two of them later died, so, you know, I don't know when, but not at birth. Anyway, in those days, most women gave up their outside work after they became mothers, but Sophia was determined to keep learning and to keep teaching Sunday school, and she did. As it turned out, being a mother also helped Sophia learn. She learned about children from being with her own children and listening to their ideas and questions. Listen very carefully to this next paragraph, okay? In those days, when most adults thought children's minds were like empty jars to fill with learning, Sophia thought differently. She thought that children were more like gardens, already planted with seeds of possibility for learning and growing. She believed that a teacher's job was to provide the good soil and water and sunlight a garden needs to grow. Isn't that beautiful? According to her granddaughter, Brenda Beck, Sophia wanted to be able to look the minister straight in the eye when explaining her ideas about religious education. So, in 1923, she was 47, she enrolled as a Bachelor of Divinity student at nearby Union Theological Seminary. At Union, the Bible was taught from the modernist point of view that she now so heartily embraced. Sophia's years at Union coincided with the height of progressive modernism. That's getting away from following the Bible and so forth. Union Theological Seminary supported the basic tenets of the social gospel movement during Foss' years of study. Already a follower of the historical emphasis on the humanity of Jesus, Foss saw the social and moral imperatives of Jesus' teachings as the basis for her understanding of the gospel message. And this is what she believed. She believed that the kingdom of God of which Jesus spoke was of this world, and to follow Jesus meant to act for social reconstruction. Sophia graduated with a Bachelor of Divinity in 1926. She was 50. After graduation, she became a lecturer in religious education on the seminary faculty. However, Word of her ideas and practices in the school at Union soon brought her into direct conflict with the Union Seminary authorities, who were basically Orthodox. And if you look up the 1920s, that was really quite a battle between, you know, the Bible as, you know, everything, and moving beyond and bringing in science. So she got involved in that. The Union School of Religion shut down in 1930. Sophia continued to teach adults at the seminary, but with curtailed hours. Fortunately, it was just at this time that Riverside Church was built right across the street from Union, and this is all New York, okay? Built specifically to provide a pulpit for Harry Emerson Fosdick, who was recognized as a champion of modernism. Its Sunday school was to be forward-looking and experimental. And by 1933, when she was 57, Sophia Lyon Foss had been invited to try out some of her ideas there at that Sunday school. She supervised and taught Sunday school at Riverside until 1942. She was 66. Much of her later writing drew on her experiences in those classes, and it was around this time that some of the Unitarians started to hear about her and so forth. So, in 1936, she was 60, Sophia was hired by the American Unitarian Association as editor of the New Beacon Press series in religious education. These educational materials included myths and tales from many different religions and cultures, as well as scientific discoveries about the world around us and stories from the lives of people from all over the world. And I wish we could get some copies of those, because they're children's stories and they're wonderful. Between 1936 and 1951, so between the ages of 60 and 75, she wrote or co-wrote at least 20 books for the series. In 1951, she became a curriculum consultant, a position which she held until she was 88 years old. In 1965, the age of 89, she wrote her last book, Worshipping Together with Questioning Minds. According to at least one biographer, a major contribution to Christian religious education was Foss' warning of an imminent danger of the church losing its youngest members due to conflicting methodologies used in religious education and science. In fact, Foss was more likely to quote scientists in her writing than theologians. And if you look at the 1920s, the Unitarians, there was a huge crisis, and Sophia Lyon Foss is credited with helping to save the Unitarians from disappearing off the map. In a keynote address she gave in 1960, at the age of 84, Foss spoke of foreseeing, and this is a quote, young people rejecting religion in increasing numbers, adding that if religions are not reformed in light of advancing knowledge, they will become sterile. Foss believed adults should be honest in their dealings with youth, avoiding pat answers and promoting authentic dialogue between science and religion. And here's another part that I admired with her. Sophia Lyon Foss also believed in religious pluralism, arguing that from the youngest years and the understanding, from the youngest years and throughout life, the study of religions of humankind not only enhanced the understanding of one's own religion, but also led to a greater sense of connectedness among people. The world community, she felt, must seek to understand and accept various religious traditions as validations of humankind's common search for the divine in diverse but life-enhancing ways. Here is what she said, and this is a quote. "Our common living room is now the whole earth. Whether we will or no, our neighbors are on the other side of the globe, as well as next door. In the light of the spaciousness of our exchanges, we find it unseemly to imagine ourselves superior. The realities of our shortcomings are all too easily observed by other nations and groups. Any one group today that tries to dominate the whole world by its ideology or by military might or by force of any kind will eventually win only the hatred of those who are put under its power." Now I'm thinking, she said that in 1952. Wouldn't it be nice if we could say, gee, isn't it good that we've moved beyond that? This is so contemporary. That was 60 years ago, for heaven's sake. Just to finish up now with her bio. In 1959, at the age of 82, Sophia Lyon-Foss was ordained a minister in the Unitarian Church. This was in recognition of a lifetime contribution to the liberal religious movement. According to one source, Sophia Lyon-Foss' ordination was different in more ways than one. Apparently, when the Montgomery County Unitarian Church, which had the largest church school in the country, offered to ordain her, she accepted. But there was a condition. She went against tradition and gave her own ordination sermon. When asked if she didn't think it was a little unusual for a minister to preach her own ordination sermon, she said, "Yes, but isn't it also a little unusual to make a minister out of an 82-year-old woman?" So she was quite amazing. Now, what I want to share with you, and we're going to do some of this together, I want to share with you just some of these quotes that I got, and, you know, you want to read, just look her up. Make sure you've got lots of time, though, because there's just so much. All right, so I've just shortened these, but, again, I thought they were so interesting. Okay, so these are quotes. "Life becomes religious whenever we make it so. When some new light is seen, when some deeper appreciation is felt, when some larger outlook is gained, when some nobler purpose is formed, when some task is well done, life becomes religious." Belief. "We are resolved to protect individual freedom of belief. This freedom must include the child as well as the parent." Identity, and I've cut these short, because they're much longer, but I tried to get the key parts. Identity. "One of the tragic ironies of history is that such original and creative geniuses as Buddha and Jesus have been extolled as perfect patterns for all to emulate. In the very struggle to be like someone else, rather than to be one's own true self, or to do one's best in one's own environment, a child is in danger of losing the pearl that is really beyond price, the integrity of his or her own soul." And finally, there's a couple more. "The religious way. The religious way is the deep way, the way that sees what physical eyes alone fail to see, the intangibles, the heart of every phenomenon. The religious way is the way that touches universal relationships, that goes high, wide, and deep, that expands feelings of kinship. Challenges to religious education. We are searching for new words and new thoughts. Indeed, we stand a quiver on the threshold of a new day. None sees clearly what is in the distance beyond our present experience. The possibilities are as yet untried, but there is a thrill and a glowing hope of being part of a young movement. And that was taken from a speech she gave when she was 90. Do these quotations seem to be old-fashioned and out of date? That's just amazing. And now there is one that has been quoted so extensively that we're going to do it together. So it's one of the readings in our hymnal. So will you turn to number 616? And you know the rules, eh? I'll read the main part, you read the italics. This is her most famous. I didn't find out when it was written, but it just cited everywhere. So, for so the children come, and so they have been coming. No angels herald their beginnings. No prophets predict their future courses. Yet each night a child is born is a holy night. They ask, where and how will this new life end, or will it ever end? Isn't that beautiful? And it says Christmas. I didn't see that as particularly Christmas. I mean, that was the idea. But so, first, and I've taken a couple of things from sermons. For so the children come was the theme of a sermon given by somebody in Massachusetts. And here are a couple of extracts from that sermon. And I thought this was kind of interesting. Let us remember, so the children come. Let us remember that this is a piece written by a woman born well over 100 years ago, near the end of the 19th century. A woman with great talent, who educated herself at a time when not many women attended college, let alone graduate school. A woman with a prophetic view of religion, a great love of children, beginning with her own five, and a determination to succeed in public leadership. The culture was against such achievement and against the leadership of women, and the culture was also resistant to her liberal understanding of religion, making her work all the more impressive. That was from a sermon that was given in 2005. And a little bit more of it. Sophia Lyon Foss believed that children were so important that she was to give her life in helping them to discover the wonders of spiritual life. When we hear the simple words, for so the children come, if our ears are finely tuned, we hear the wisdom of a long life heralding the priceless importance of children. For so the children come, and so they have been coming, always in the same way they come. And always, if we are prepared to see it, they waken the sacred essence of life in our lives. Finally, let me close with another quotation from another sermon based on For So the Children Come. This is from Arizona. Oh, I should say we have Americans here. Unitarian Universalist Church in Arizona. Okay. And this is the conclusion of his sermon and the conclusion of this talk. When Reverend Richards speaks about the legacy of Sophia Lyon Foss, he says, she reminds us that, yes, Unitarian Universalism is for children, children of all ages.
Thanks very much, Helen. Would you care to stay and answer some questions or receive comments?
comments would be better than questions, because,
okay.
You know.
Would anyone like to speak to our presentation today?
She said,
don't be shy.
Thank you for the presentation. That was pretty neat, and just wanted to make a comment about the relevance of some of the things that she believed in and she said, and how I just find it interesting that whether it's just our own lack of experience or arrogance, that we think we have such unique, brilliant thoughts on certain things, and it's how cyclical it can be, and we need to remember that and hopefully learn from it once in a while. I don't know. But thank you for the presentation.
Thank you, Helen. I caught your enthusiasm, and I think that's remarkable to find a woman like that in those times. This is a question which you might not be able to answer, but you said she became a curriculum consultant. I'm just wondering if any departments of education might have recognized her. No, it was the Unitarian Church or the perhaps Riverside Church, which
yes.
I lived near when I was in New York, and I'm sorry I didn't go. But she left in 42, did she? I think. Yes, she did. I noted that.
Before your time.
Thanks, Helen, and thanks for the time that you obviously put into these presentations. I really am grateful for that, and the care of the person that you're researching and presenting. So I really appreciate that. Two things. I had a question, and then also a separate thing. My question was, in it, you mentioned how there was a crisis in the 20s that almost tore everything all apart. Without it being a big long thing, I'm wondering if you can summarize what happened, because I'm curious about that. And secondly, in the future, I'm wondering if you're willing to dress up as the people you're presenting.
Let's hear your answer.
I don't know if I can say very much more about that. You know, you can't remember. You know, it's in here somewhere. But there was, you know, there was quite a lot written about the fact that more and more people were leaving the church. And if we think about, this was a time of great difficulty in the United States. There were financial problems after war. There was a period of transition. And the church said, you know, hang on, we just read the Bible and so forth. And Sophia Lyon Foss said when she was a kid, I mean, Sundays, you know, the children read the Bible, and they read the Bible, and they thought holy thoughts all day long and so forth and so on. And then there was the other thing that was happening was that this modern movement was sort of saying, hey, listen, the world has changed. We have to change with it. And Unitarianism was not that big at that time. But anyway, I remember seeing the numbers were really, really down. And then little by little, people like her and modernists and so forth, people started to find a place in the church, so they went back.
That's my turn. Hi, my name. Happy birthday. Anyway, the question to you is, don't you think we are letting the children in classes, we don't take care of them as we should, because we basically fail children as far as the education is concerned, or at least a majority of people we let go because they don't belong to the curve, and we curve them, whatever the expression is. But what do you think about the fact that my feeling is we let the children totally go, we don't educate them towards what they are the best?
Well, this was, you know, they said that Sophia Lyon Foss was influenced by Dewey. I think she was very much her own person, and she was influenced more by children. But this is, those of us who have been, you know, in faculties of education, we know, and or we've been involved in teaching, that we don't seem to be able to it's not compromise, but work together. It's either or. So either you follow everything completely, or children are free, and you know. And Dewey himself commented on the wide open classroom was not the idea, that you have to keep working. That's why I like Sophia Lyon Faw's idea of the garden. You know, there's a garden, but the garden, if you don't do anything about the garden, you're not going to get any plants. But you're not the plant. You're working together. And I think I've been retired now for 6 years or 7 years or whatever, so I don't know what's happening in faculties now and in schools. I'm not really up to date on that. But I think that there have been some people who have been questioning, who have been said, it's not children should decide everything or everything should go by book. There has to be a dialogue between the two. And I don't know. I'm not up to date as to what has happened. But the sad thing is that we're talking the 1920s, and we haven't, don't seem to have gotten farther.
Okay, I just wanted to make a comment on the, I think it was asked whether, what the upset was in the Unitarian Church, and I think I know that at that time there was a lot going on regarding Darwin and issues around does God exist?
Yeah.
And so... that I think that that's what that upset was about, and I think that she was able to throw oil on troubled waters there to say, let's look at all these things and think about them and give each other the freedom to do that. So I think it was that was an issue that was pressing a lot of religions, but especially Unitarianism, which wasn't mystical in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
It was going to get even less mystical.
Yeah, that was part of it, yeah.
Well, thanks again, Helen. That's a remarkable woman and a great presentation. Thank you.